It's early afternoon in Texas, but the sky is dark at the eye of a tornado. A woman jumps out of a car and runs. The wind whips past her, pulling sand and dirt and leaves with it. She pauses, looks down, focuses for a moment, then lifts a camera and points it directly into the storm before her. An eye for an eye, if you like. It is Texas after all. Photographer Crystal Wright has got the shot. She's the focus of a new National Geographic series on photographers working in the field like her. Welcome to you, Crystal.
Thank you.
Tell me about the role that adrenaline plays in your job. I imagine that given the sorts of topic matters and subjects that you've covered in your career, are you an adrenaline junkie?
I had a feeling you were going to say that. I have such a complicated relationship with the term adrenaline junkie, mainly because I guess I assume that people always will jump to this, like, it's irresponsible, I'm just, you know, a bit of a rev head just going after the thrill, which I don't think that's the case. If anything, like, I can't deny there's a rush of adrenaline that comes through the body, but really what drives me is just the curiosity to experience Mother Nature in such, you know, a raw and powerful form.
So is it a little bit like portrait photographers are innately intrigued at people and personality, whereas you, for you, the personality is Mother Nature?
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it.
When you are in the field, of course, the adrenaline, as we mentioned, is a big deal. There's this great bit of archive footage of a rally photographer a couple of years ago, and this rally car's careening towards him, and he just very ever so slightly stands behind a brick wall while this massive rally car smashes into the wall, and he just carries on doing his job. Because you need to roll with the punches. What have you learned about being resilient in your job?
Well, one thing is, a lot of people always ask me, like, do I get afraid? And the answer is yes. I'm afraid a lot of the times. But that fear is a very healthy fear to have, because I believe it's what actually keeps me safe and keeps me alive. It's the day that I turn up. For example, the easy example would be I'm standing at the edge of a cliff. I'm about to rappel over on a rope. And I guarantee you, even this to this day, like 20 years of doing this, my heart still is like thumping through my chest. And as long as I'm feeling that, I know that I'm okay. But if I'm doing the same action and nothing is happening, I think that's when I need to go, nope, I need to pack up and I need to walk away, because complacency by far is the biggest probably proponent of any accidents in the field.
So was it complacency or a lack of instinct or judgment in the incident that you had in Pakistan? Tell me, this was a pretty near miss in anyone's book. Tell me about your hang gliding accident in Pakistan.
Yeah, well, it was actually paragliding, and it was definitely, I mean, in these situations, it's incredibly difficult to read a gut instinct, because sometimes you think, no, I'm just being silly, I just need to get over it. And look, some days that is the case. You pick yourself up and it turns out to be an incredible day. But in Pakistan, I was definitely clouded by this side of, you know, it was my first assignment with National Geographic, and I really wanted to prove myself to the editors that I could handle an assignment. And we're at this point in the trip, it was 6 days from the end. The guys that I was documenting weren't able to break the world altitude record yet. So we were all feeling that pressure of like, we're running out of time. We need to make the most of every moment. And that day, when I think back, and of course, hindsight's a beautiful thing. And I look back thinking, gosh, like, we were so late to the takeoff. Like, I was there, I was waiting. The guys were a bit slow because we also had a film crew who were making a documentary. And they just delayed it so much that we really missed that ideal window to take off. And one of our friends, he takes off. He's a bit frustrated. He's like, I just need to fly. He's like, great, off you go. And that ended up being probably the crux of the situation that really saved a lot of time. And then when I'm trying to launch with Pepote, who's my Spanish tandem pilot, and we're just waiting and waiting. Gosh, it felt like an eternity. And then finally, when we do launch, things just go wrong straight away. And I'm having a hard time trying to process, because, of course, this is happening in a matter of seconds. And, you know, once you, you know, two people are running down a very steep hill, like once you start running, there's no stopping. Yeah.
Not much of a choice, really, is there?
No. And I just remember at some point, like, my feet are off the ground. And that point, we had just, you know, turned very hard left. What had happened was my pilot had tripped over behind me and was stumbling. And in that, I believe he just simply pulled the wrong brake cord, which sent us hard left. And by the time I'm like looking at my feet off the ground, I look back up and I just see the inevitable conclusion, which is a huge, you know, few boulders in front of me. And the last thought in my head, honestly, in this tone was just, oh, shit. And then that was it. I was out. And I guess it was an acceptance of like, okay, I made a very big mistake.
It's funny how the spiritual side really takes over and you start to swear like a trooper.
I'm doing very good to keep my language quite tame because most people who know me, I'm quite colourful as well. But
so you lived to fight another day, as it were, and you decided to take some of these skills and move into something altogether, perhaps more dangerous. This is supercell storms in the United States, the ones that you're chasing down in Tornado Alley in America. There's all these interesting terms about the anatomy of supercell storms. You've got words like outflow boundaries, motherships, rear flank downdrafts. It sounds science fiction. What is it about the storm that got you excited to snap it?
Oh, you're missing some of the best ones. You got the bear's cage, whale's mouth, ghost train. I mean,
tell me about the storm. I mean, we all love that feeling of electricity in the air, those big fat drops of rain. This is something that you know, your instincts kick in and you seem to go towards it rather than away from it.
I think deep down we all have that little inner Twister child in us. I mean, when Twister came out, and mind you, if you watch it again, it still holds up. I mean, okay, the graphics towards the end are not quite there. But for the most part, that film is still a cult classic. And I just think everyone, when that came out, everyone's like, ooh, I'm curious. Like, yeah, like what is it like to see a tornado and or to get up close with supercells? And I started chasing in 2018 with Nick Moyer. And when we landed in Dallas, you know, within 1 hour, we were in the most ferocious dust storm I've ever been in. And it only took about 5 minutes standing out in that. And I was like, oh no, I've got another expensive hobby. I fucking love this. sorry. There's no other way to put it. I just had to use that emphasis there. But it's just, there is just something about being in the elements and being humbled by Mother Nature. It is just an incredible feeling, but it's also like this exists. Like there are people, like aside from us who chase it, there are people who have no choice and they have to live through these storms every spring. And I think what's really important is that through visual documentation, there are times like, you know, the visual medium is actually quite powerful when it comes to collecting data, because surprisingly to this day, we still have missing information about how tornadoes are actually formed.
If you've just joined me on RN Drive, I'm talking with extreme sports enthusiast and photographer Crystal Wright. She's the subject of a new National Geographic documentary on the kind of behind the scenes of photographers working in the field. In the documentary, one of your colleagues says that you, quote, make photographs, not take photographs. And we see that the evidence of this when you use LED lights in the cracks of a cliff face for a shot that you've been planning and dreaming of. So it isn't just bodies in motion photography. These are often sort of stylized pieces of art, aren't they? It's clear that you have an idea in your head, a vision that you're trying to portray using camera and lighting.
Definitely. I really enjoy two very distinct styles of how I approach photography. And one, like with storm chasing, I turn up, I'm there to witness, to document, and have absolutely, well, basically no control over the situation that unfolds. And then on the other hand, yeah, I scheme and dream these particular visions, and then I just get very obsessive and decide I just need to find a way to visually execute these ideas. And I can assure you there have been many failed ideas over the years. Like sometimes, oof, you go, okay, that really didn't pan out as I hoped. But when they do work out, oh, it is absolutely worth all the effort, the time, the finances. It's just, it's hard to articulate that feeling as an artist, but I just think it's so important to pursue passion projects.
But how does that idea get in your head in the first place? I know that one of your inspirations is the Italian Renaissance painter Caravaggio. So there's obviously these frames in your mind to start with. What other sources of inspiration are there?
I would say music. particularly like modern classical. It's like I love the work of Nicholas Britell. He's a composer who is, he's in a lot of films soundtracks, but one of them in particular is Moonlight. I think that was the Oscar film a few years back now. And there is one piece in that film where I can listen to that piece of music and it always just gets, it just starts my brain ticking over. But the other thing that's, I think, quite essential for me is that I can't be overstimulated by too much screen time. So, you know, I'm trying to break this habit with my phone at the moment where, you know, I go to make a cup of tea and I will pick up my phone because I'm like, oh, I should check messages. So I've had to squash that habit because the best thing is, and I think about when I grew up, I remember sitting out in the front veranda in the morning sun and my cat would be sleeping beside me and you just sit there. You didn't need any screen. I could just look out and sometimes nothing comes to mind, but other times your mind is just off on its own journey. And I think that's really important to create that space and to celebrate boredom because that's the only way my mind stimulates itself. And yeah, it's hard to explain, but then next thing you know, an idea pops in my head. And I know that wouldn't be possible if I'm bloody doom scrolling on my phone.
Well, the results absolutely speak for themselves. Your photography is absolutely stunning. Really great to have a chance to talk to you about some of your process. Crystal Wright is my guest. You can catch the episode on her and the other photographers on the National Geographic show. It's called Photographer, which is out now on Disney Plus. Good to talk to you, Crystal.
No worries. Thanks so much for having me on.
You've been listening to a podcast of The Drawing Room with me, Andy Park. For more great conversations, search for The Drawing Room on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.